Welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is a great place to know what's going on in the state of Texas. I'm Ken Hance, the Chancellor at Texas Tech University, and if you want to be in on the know, it's the Texas Tribune. You should go.
Thank you, Chancellor Hance. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for Leap Day, sort of somewhere between February and March. Joining me is Editor-in-Chief and CEO Evan Smith.
That was the Hansler. That was Chancellor Hance. He's the Hansler of Texas Tech, right?
That was the little nugget you were waiting to drop on us?
No, here's don't you talk about my nugget, Reeve. here's my nugget. What trivia question is Ken major political trivia question is Ken Hance the answer to? The only person who has ever beaten in an election, George W. Bush. Did you know that?
Yeah, I thought you meant physically beaten. And it was
I'm not actually aware of anybody.
I am not knowing.
But
yet.
Did you know that? Did you know that that's the answer to a trivia question?
I did know that.
1978.
Yeah. I guess it would have been more entertaining if I had not known that.
Who was George W. Bush's campaign manager? Am I correct about this?
We don't even know. Michael Williams.
Right.
In that congressional race.
Right.
Anymore?
A true fact.
Where are they today?
Well, Michael Williams was just across the street the other day.
That's right, yeah.
We got any more for us?
I'm done.
All right, well, let's move on to Executive Editor Ross Ramsey.
I got nothing.
Ordinarily, when we're talking about trivia, he's your guy right there.
He's a very trivial man.
He is indeed.
And Ben Philpott of KUT and the Texas Tribune is also here, wearing an orange tie and orange shirt.
About to say, you got to see what happened here.
Are you wishing you were back on the road?
He looks like he...
I'm kind of afraid to say something. Either way, I'll get beat up, right?
Just jump in.
Remember that time you were beaten by the Hansler? That does sound like a WWF. I don't mean Words with Friends, like a real
WWE
wrestling name.
What's up with the orange shirt
and orange tie?
I don't know. My wife picked it out of the closet.
No.
What am I
supposed
to do?
Works for the university.
Do work for the university.
You look like you've been making out with Bevo or something. It's like it's definitely not a. It's a fashion forward choice.
All right. Well, let's.
Is our time up?
Let's kick.
I'm stalling.
Is this over yet?
let's kick things off. With a guy whose suit choices are also often questioned, Ron Paul, who's running for the GOP nomination.
This is not my beautiful house.
We are on the. Not the eve. What's the opposite of the eve? The next day after the...
the day after. we're on the reeve of the Michigan primary.
Of the Michigan primary. I mean, it didn't like... Ron Paul didn't light up the place.
Surely we're down to one listener by now.
Right. Todd's mom.
How much do you think we were up to
begin with? Wendy Davis makes Todd's mom listen every time in the event that we shout out to Todd.
Just in case we don't say something nice about our district.
Todd is our producer. With a striking feminine side, I believe, as Evan was discussing before we started the podcast.
Don't say anything. They'll know.
Michigan primary.
He didn't do anything in Michigan or Arizona, really, right? He may have beaten Gingrich in one or the other.
He's gone back to the Ron Paul numbers. I mean, you know, he starts at seven, ends at seven. I mean, we're getting the regular Ron Paul performance here.
But that implies...
There's a group that never sort of leaves, and people always give him a look, and we've sort of been through the, well, we gave Ron Paul a look. Somebody said the other day that he was down to one traveling reporter.
Dylan Byers from Politico yesterday tweeted, in fact, he's down to one reporter following.
So, I think
that's true.
You know, we're kind of down to Ron Paul as the voice of a particular important faction of the Republican Party, but it's not a majority. And at some point, you know, he's going to, I think his blessing might be important, but I don't think he's really a factor as a candidate anymore.
He's a protest candidate, but it's not even as much as that, in that his protest doesn't amount to very much. He has said all along it's about the delegates, but so far he hasn't been acquiring very many delegates. Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to get into this string of primaries.
Proportional states,
which
right?
He'll have some delegates to bargain with at the convention, but he's not going to get a primetime speaking slot, because even if the nominee allows it, the networks won't. He's got no message to deliver that is building on the message he's been delivering for not just this cycle, but for every cycle. It's basically the same. Where he's an interesting player in this is he's running interference for Romney, it's said, against people like Santorum and Gingrich in some of these races in which a straight ahead Romney versus one candidate race would be problematic potentially for Romney. But then this morning, Ron Paul put up an ad that attacks serial hypocrite Newt Gingrich, counterfeit conservative Rick Santorum, and flip-flopper Mitt Romney. He's after Romney with the other guys.
But if you were being accused of, you know, shilling for your opponent, what is the best thing you could do to make it look like you're not doing that?
So this is like getting a 96 on a test when you cheated just to make it look like you didn't get 100. Is that right?
Could be. Well, don't some people question if he could be opening him up a slot for his son?
He wants Rand Paul to be considered for something is one of the theoretical rationales here. You know, he doesn't...
He's surrounded by weird theories all the time.
It's very strange. You know, he doesn't operate by the same set of rules or playbook that most people do. So it's hard to really know what to make of what he's doing.
Dropped off the campaign trail today, Leap Day. It's his wife's birthday.
Is that right?
Yeah, he just, you know, see you guys, I'll be back.
He did that in the run-up to one of the other elections because it was his anniversary. Is that correct?
I think it's her birthday. It might be his anniversary.
No, I mean earlier.
Oh, right.
He dropped off like...
Before. Yeah. So, you know, yesterday I was in Denton doing an event with Senator Craig Estes and Representative Myra Crownover and on the campus of University of North Texas, and we talked about a lot of things, but we got to the presidential. Because yesterday was Michigan and Arizona. I said to Estes, are you comfortable? Estes is is a Republican, right? No one's idea of a liberal, blah, blah.
Right.
Who are you going to support in this race? And he said, well, I'm comfortable with 3 out of the 4 Republican candidates. I could support 3 out of the 4. And so then he just stopped there, and I was like, all right, no, come on. He said, well, I don't really agree with Ron Paul on a lot of foreign policy stuff, and I don't think I'd be comfortable with Ron Paul. So, okay. So I said, Representative Crownover, what about you? What would you do in the race? And she said, I will support whichever Republican wins the nomination. And so I said, so you could support Ron Paul? She said, no, I said I could support any Republican who wins the nomination.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, so let's assume an asteroid comes down and kills Romney, Santorum, and Gingrich, and the only candidate left standing is Paul, and he's
brokered
the nominee.
Brokered convention.
What are you going to do? And she said, I was hoping that the asteroid would kill me also. So the one takeaway from this was that Representative Crownover would rather die than vote for Ron Paul for president. I mean, it's just...
Well, or that she would not want to live in a world without Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum.
Yes, I'm sure that's exactly what she meant. The point here is that Paul continues to have a problem even attracting his own guys in this race. And so he's not making inroads with Republicans. He's not really growing the Ron Paul revolutionaries to any great degree. And I think it's fair to ask, what's he doing? He's not running again, obviously, for Congress.
He's holding a pocket of votes. I mean, he's got that. He's got that. And these proportional primaries that are coming up are kind of interesting on Super Tuesday, which, you know, we used to be in. You know, he could.
You know, once upon a time, next Tuesday would have been relevant.
We would have been in the last week of early voting and, you know, parallel universe. But
that will be our second topic, so let's not get into it too much.
Ron Paul could take some votes. I don't know how many, but he could take some votes to the convention. And I don't know what he does with it, but it could be interesting.
So if this.
He could bring them to a couple, you know, this position or that position.
Well, if this is the end for him, I mean, in terms of this is the last time I would expect, I guess, he would run for president. How much of this, and you talked a little bit about trying to find a slot somewhere for his son, how much of this is just keeping people interested so when his son runs? And does his son perform better because he's...
He's never said anything. This is one of those interesting theories that he's never said anything that I know of that would tell you that he's sort of trying to lay the groundwork for his son. I mean, you know, there's a succession thing, but, you know, that's possible just because their last name is both Paul and, you know, on and on, but I don't know that he's ever said anything that said, you know, I'm laying the groundwork for him. In fact, he's denied it.
Has Rand said anything about wanting to run for president one day?
Didn't he recently say he'd be, like, open to the vice presidency? But, I mean, who, like, a lot of people would be.
Him and everybody else.
Yeah. Cool gig, right.
Right.
But I mean, what Ron Paul will have done is brought many discussions onto network TV and into the public light that otherwise wouldn't have been
about
there.
The Fed, right? Like, about the gold standard.
Right. Right. But I think the whole Rand Paul thing is a way of saying, Ron Paul, surely he's not serious, right? And I just think it's another way to say that. Hmm.
I will say Ron Paul has been willing to take positions that were clearly out of sync with the party and with the audiences at these debates. He is not one of these guys who's licking his finger and putting it up and win.
Well, they did the one word.
And you got to give him. You got to give him credit for that.
They did the one word thing at the Arizona debate, right? And he said consistent. And everybody starts clapping. It's like everybody that
he's
got a brand.
He is that. Yeah.
Although people clapped for all the words that were thrown out a bit.
Oh, there were some of them.
Except for cheerful.
Gingrich saying cheerful. That's hilarious.
Great moments. And he's a cherub.
He's a lot of things.
He's just a cherub.
Yeah.
But in that vein, don't you imagine that Ron Paul's reaction to Estes and Crownover would basically be that, you know, I'm not trying to convince you guys are not my guys.
He'd say they're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you guys are institutional Republicans and you don't waver from the party line, and I'm trying to carve a new view of things out there, and I'm not interested in your support.
And he just can't convince people to come to his side.
He's unorthodox, and this is an orthodox party.
And that's all, but his unorthodoxy is probably why he attracts so many young people.
Right.
Are you guys sort of disappointed that this is all we have to talk about in this exciting primary time?
Wouldn't it be great
from our Texas perspective?
Given where we are right now and the importance of Super Tuesday,
Texas
it'd be
would
great
be...
to have Texas in the mix right now.
Right. TV station stock went down. Look at all the ads you're not selling.
Well, I mean, Santorum would have a pretty good shot of winning the state.
Yeah, Mike Huckabee got, I don't have it in front of me, but around 38%.
About a third, a little bit more than a third.
At after a moment the race was gone.
McCain was going to be the nominee.
Right.
Yeah, and this is actually a toss-up time. Right. And pseudo-toss-up.
You know, I think
by May 29th,
what would be
the election will basically be resolved enough, I think.
What would be really interesting right now, you know, just to sort of play with in your mind, is Perry endorsed Gingrich. Gingrich has sort of been awfully, awfully quiet. He didn't even run really in Michigan, right?
No, but he's counting on Georgia and Tennessee.
Right, but, you know, if we were back in Texas, week. It would be interesting to see the Santorum, Romney, Paul's a native son, although he's never done well on a statewide Texas ballot, and Perry supposedly with Gingrich. It would be an interesting race.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry to miss that one.
Yeah. In another universe somewhere. We're having a great podcast about that.
Somewhere else?
Yeah.
The Earth 2 version of this podcast?
Well, let's talk
about... Steve Hamilton is the host.
Yes, and it's...
Long dormant Twitter feed. Right.
And Devin Smith.
Yeah, that Twitter feed never really took off.
It didn't. One of Styles' rare failures.
Yeah. Well, it was, anyway, let's not talk about the alternate me. let's talk about why we... are not having that Super Tuesday event.
Well, the courts drew a map that the federal court in San Antonio drew a map the Supremes didn't like, so the Supremes said stop.
Not Diana Ross.
No, this is the U.S. Supreme Court.
She probably didn't care for it either.
U.S. Supreme Court said stop and delayed the primaries.
Not enough wigs
on
the map.
So now the courts, I'm just going to keep talking. So now the courts have come up with the three maps for Congress, for the State House, and for the State Senate. And as we do this, they haven't actually set a May 29th date, but all anticipation is that they will. So we have interim maps. It looks like the difference between what we would have got and what we got is about four seats in the Texas House, maybe one or two seats in Congress, and they resolved a Senate fight that was going to be resolved, I think, anyway. So the difference, I've been saying. The difference in these maps was the Republicans were going to win by 6 touchdowns or 5 touchdowns. Looks like they're going to win by 6 touchdowns.
You think that the net-net is better for the Republicans?
I think the Republicans do better in the maps that the courts put out now than the maps that the courts put out the first time.
Travis County is, obviously at KUT we were looking very specifically at Central Texas yesterday, mm-hmm. and there's absolutely no difference in the congressional, state house, or Senate maps from the ones passed in the legislature and the ones that the interim maps that just came out.
Yeah, the critical difference here was that the San Antonio court thought that since the legislative maps had not been pre-cleared in Washington, that they should start with the maps that are currently in law and draw from there. Supreme Court said, no. You got to start with the legislative maps and make some assumptions about what you think the Washington courts will do with pre-clearance and draw from there. So the result is... Instead of getting a map that's closer to the current maps that we already have, we get a map that's closer to what the legislature passed at the end of the
session.
And
that was the whole – they said you have to go back to legislative intent. Or at least the Supreme Court said that? I know that was an argument from the Republican side.
The Supreme Court said that.
Okay.
The Supreme Court said that. So basically we have maps that are the legislative maps with some alterations for this provision of the Constitution, that provision of the Voting Rights Act.
So who took it in the end here? I want to know who got it.
Well, Lloyd Doggett took it.
As a general rule, the Republicans were able to institutionalize, to a great extent, the big sweeping wins that they had in the 2010 elections. 101 Republicans in the Texas House. So they've drawn a map, and the courts produced a map where 97 of the seats in the House were won by John McCain in 2008. So they're pretty close to their number, and it kind of goes that way throughout the map. In the congressional maps, there are 9 Democrats in the current map. There would be 11 or 12 in the new map, but we gained 4 new seats, right? So it's 11 or 12 of 36 against 9 of 32.
Right,
so that's roughly the same.
But if you recall, we reported some you know, eons ago of a potential compromise being floated by Lamar Smith and Henry Cuellar that would have divided the new seats 2-2.
Right.
In the end, that's pretty much what's happening.
Kind of what they did.
And the prospective additional seat that the Democrats might pick up could be Farenthold's seat, could be Canseco's seat, depending upon which one of those.
Farenthold's seat will be harder to win for the Democrats. He's got a geographical problem in that, you know, he's from Corpus Christi and the thing goes all the way up almost to Austin. But it's a Republican district. The Kiko Canseco district is this thing that goes from San Antonio to El Paso, and it's been a classic swing district for, you know, probably 12 years now. In
presidential year, it was half and half almost.
Presidential year, Obama won it by 1,100 votes, you know, out of something like 90,000, 95,000. But in gubernatorial years, it's a Republican district. So it's,
of course, I would observe that Pete Gallego may be a better Democratic candidate in that district than Ciro, given the fact that Ciro had some issues that were specific to Ciro last time.
The argument for Gallego is that he has been winning in a Republican West Texas district for a long, long time.
In fact, his legislative district was more than 60% McCain in the last election, and yet he consistently got reelected as a Democrat. When he sat with us at the Austin Club a couple weeks ago, he is a conservative Democrat.
Right. The argument for a Canseco is that, you know, San Antonio is still the anchor for this district. He's from San Antonio.
Yeah.
It's a district where, you know, if you get a Hispanic Republican there, the bet from the Republican side is that the Republicans will vote for the R and the Hispanics will split their votes between the Democrat and the Republican.
And they have an interest in protecting a Hispanic Republican in that seat.
Sure they do.
They really need to.
Sure they do. They're in a position now where, you know, the way the redistricting works in Texas is if Hispanics always vote Democratic, the Republicans are always in this position of, we've drawn all of the seats that we can draw for Republicans because we're constrained by race. So what you have to do is win Hispanic voters over, because you have to draw Hispanic, you have to draw Latino and black districts. And the only way to win those districts, if you have to draw them, is to convert those voters. They've got to start converting voters.
So who would the Republicans be more willing to throw over, Farenthold or Canseco, if they had to throw over one?
Farenthold. Because you want Latinos, I think. I don't know that they ever, you know, kind of landed that way where they had to consider it like that. But I think, you know, if you gave them that choice, that's what they do. They did this time, you know, to get to Ben's point, they did do a pretty good job of writing out one of the last white Democrats in the congressional delegation, Lloyd Doggett.
Get along, little Doggett, right?
You know, Doggett's in a district that goes from the Tarrant County line, you know, well into Hays County. And it's a Republican district. Or he can move to East Travis County and run in a district that runs from East Austin down to San Antonio that favors a San Antonio Latino.
It's the exact same district that brought Joaquin Castro out.
Initially, before he moved over to the Charlie Gonzalez.
So it's the exact same district that.
But
that,
now
that
you
was.
Have Sylvia Romo, who is the Bexar County tax assessor, who is formerly.
Formerly a House member.
House member who had Joaquin's seat prior to Joaquin, that seat, who is a known quantity down there.
Right. And we got some other people tapping around here. You know, when they were drawing these lines in the legislature, there was a kind of a running conversation between Castro, Trey Martinez Fisher, and Mike Villarreal about, you know, are you going to run? I don't know. Are you going to run? I don't know. And they decided to go with Castro. And Martinez Fisher and Villarreal stood down. Castro is now running in Charlie Gonzalez's seat. So there's some conversation about, well, what about those other two guys? Are they interested? Martinez Fisher doesn't look like it, but, you know, isn't saying no, but is saying, I haven't really thought about it. And Villarreal has been kind of quiet. So
my question is, if Romo and Villarreal are both in that race, if the presence of Villarreal or Martinez Fisher doesn't get Romo out of the race, and they're both in there competing for the Hispanic votes in that part of the world, doesn't that help Doggett?
Maybe so.
Does help Doug. Now, who is Maria Alvarado? Jason Embry tweeted that Maria Alvarado was going to get in that race. Who is that?
It's a new candidate. I don't know. There was a lady that ran for, with the same name, that ran for lieutenant governor, but she was from Fort Worth. So I'm not sure. It's a new name.
Could Villarreal's current pursuit of graduate school affect his decision?
I don't know. Yeah, you have to run as a dropout.
I remember that he got crosswise with the public school teachers in San Antonio last time over something, and that there was some issue as to whether the base Democrats were going to be 100% with Villarreal?
Oh, he did
something over failing charter school.
Right,
is that right?
Right.
Oh, Yeah, there was something that he got on the wrong end of the argument.
Doggett's a hard person to wire Doggett, around. Doggett, he'll be a hard person to beat.
Whatever you think of him, I mean, he puts out this press release. The maps came out, you know, around 3 o'clock yesterday on Tuesday afternoon, and by, you know, within an hour or so, may have been an hour and a half, but we have a press release from Doggett that says, I am running. I have been, this district includes a lot of people that I've represented. I'm looking forward to continuing to represent them. And attached, you will find an invitation to a fundraiser at the home of Michael Watts of San Antonio with a bunch of people on it. And it's like, you know, I'm running in San Antonio.
Yeah.
They tried to ride him out in the delay maps in 2003.
Just when he ran against Becky Klein, ran all the way down to McAllen. Well,
yeah, they ran one of those Bacon Strip districts that ran all the way from Austin down to the border. And, you know, he campaigns really hard. He's got a lot of money. He's going to be very, very difficult to beat.
Well, with that map, though, it's same with this one. I think they were, I would guess, that they were hoping that he would lose in the Democratic primary there, and they just didn't get anybody strong enough to beat him.
Well, he'll probably have a Republican opponent in this race, but you have to assume that the Democrat is going to be favored in this race, given the composition of it in 35.
Depending on what happens with the presidential race.
Depending upon what happens with the
president.
Well, what happened with... Sorry, this is sort of just a little change, but I was just wondering about one Hispanic Republican, Republican, who looked at the map and thought, I'm not going to get in that with Aaron Pena.
I'm in. I'm out. I'm in. Yeah. I'm out.
Well,
I'm in.
I think, you know, what I can tell you is I think Aaron's, you know, I have become by default the Pena whisperer. So let me do some interpretive dance here and give you the sense of what Aaron's thinking. I think Aaron's position on this was always, I'm going to keep my options open, but Aaron has been very public, as a lot of members have been public, that $600 a month doesn't cut it. And you give up often a lucrative career in some other profession to go for the legislature, and then you say it's only 140 days every 2 years, but that's a lie. Really, it's a full-time job. And the ability to provide for your family is not there. And in Aaron's case, Aaron's got a couple kids in college, and I think Aaron just decided enough. Now, were there a bunch of people shooting at him down in the valley for switching parties? Of course. And does Aaron occasionally, because of his compulsive candor, cause himself some trouble? Oh, yeah, he does. But I respect him at least for getting in there swinging. You got to respect him for that.
Is he going to keep up his Capital blog?
He better. I mean, I think, you know, one of the great things about Aaron is Aaron has always been willing to engage across a lot of platforms, and the haters know where to find him, let's just say.
Right.
When they decide to hate on him. You know, Rachel Ferris and the various other people who have embraced their status as Aaron antagonists will have to find somebody else to pick on. But I think Aaron not running...
Evan, as the Pena Whisperer,
for instance,
would love to step up, I'm sure.
But, you know, I think one thing that was
probably...
Start
watching the mean Rachel Evan Smith.
I think one thing that was probably in Aaron's mind is, you know, a bunch of districts down there did change. You know, right. Jam Lozano's district is now actually slightly McCain-favored.
Right.
Ryan Guillen was moved into a district that was... a little bit different.
Right.
You know, Veronica Gonzalez can still proudly wear her I am the 1.5% t-shirt, you know, because that district is still barely anything like her district previously.
Right.
I went to the legislature and all I got was this 1.5% t-shirt.
Damn t-shirt. But, you know, the fact is the composition of the map will result in an overwhelming Republican majority. This is the big takeaway, right? I mean, that's it. We're not going to see much change. Right.
Well, so what's the future takeaway? This is an interim map. So where does...
So this gets confusing, but...
Well, let's get
maybe I shouldn't have asked that. Never mind.
There's an interim map, and it's going to be used in the 2012 elections. And then there will be a remedial map when the courts reconcile whatever the Washington court does with whatever the San Antonio court has done. Assuming they're going to have to remedy those differences, and that's called the remedial map. And that'll be the permanent map unless... The Texas legislature looks at it and says, you know, we don't like the remedial map, and we don't want to use it in the 2014 elections. And because the delay experience allows us to redraw redistricting maps in mid-decade, if they don't like the remedial map, they can come back in the next legislative session, start all over again.
And then there are whispers of an appeal of these interim maps. What does that do?
Well, I think there will be
an
appeal. The appeal goes directly to the Supreme Court. And if this court followed what the Supreme Court ordered it to do in January, that seems like a year ago, but in January, then the Supremes are going to say, no, we're fine with that, and the appeals will be over. I think we'll know about the status of any appeals and about the answer to any appeals probably within 10 days or so.
And
I
when
think
will
that'll be very, very quick.
When will we know for sure that we will get to vote on May 29th?
The court issued these three maps, and they left open a couple of other things. They are going to have to issue an order that says, here's when your election is going to be. Everything lines up for May 29th, by the way. They've hit all their deadlines. Here are the election law waivers that we need to grant in order to make a May 29th election happen. Here are the changes we need to make on behalf of the Republican and Democratic parties in terms of delegate selection and all of that kind of stuff that's written into state law. And here's your filing deadline. You know, they said they were going to reopen filing. And this is going to be interesting because candidates can file anew. People who didn't file before can jump in. People who did file before can jump out. And people who are on the rosters now can say, wait a minute, I'm going to run in the other race. So we're going to have this giant shuffle sometime within the next week or so.
And then when will the runoffs be if it is May 29th? And what does that mean for state underdog candidates that are hoping to, you know, if they can get a runoff in the summer?
It'll be July 31st. And the theory with runoff elections is only true believers vote. And so you can manipulate an election or win an election, however you want to say that, with a very small number of voters. If you're in a Texas House seat and it's a runoff election and you go look at runoff history or summer election history and you say, you know, this is interesting, only 2,000 people vote in a runoff in this district. You can win that if you just get on the phone and get, you know, 300 or 400 people added to your numbers.
It
becomes very easy to play with.
The runoff date is an enormous problem, I think, for a lot of candidates whose voters may be at the La Jolla Tennis Club on vacation on July 31st.
The turnout problem
here. Or up in Telluride. I mean, it's you know, I have to say, I actually, you know, of course, all your stories are really good, Ross. But the one that I thought was most
something just died
interesting to me. I think you're
he was just channeling Pena right there.
Somewhere a flower wilted.
you are correct that the lieutenant governor had better win the damn election on May 29th.
Right.
I absolutely believe
this is the race for U.S. Senate.
There is peril always in a runoff when an incumbent can't get to 50,
right,
and is running against a movement candidate on July 31st.
Mm-hmm.
That peril, I think, will be most definitely a possibility.
Yeah, this is set up for lousy turnout. The presidential race, as you said, will probably be over by May 29th.
Probably be over by then. I mean, who knows? So, maybe it won't be.
So that's not the draw that it would have been. May 29th happens to be the day after Memorial Day. So, you know, all of us sleepy-eyed people coming back from wherever we went. And then the runoff is when it's, you know, the part of the summer where it's 158 degrees.
Well, it is also, even May 29th, if I'm correct about this, I believe I am correct about this, the public schools in Texas end the previous week. They end the previous Friday, I believe.
I'm not sure.
I believe.
There is a weird little...
So you think the school children will be voting?
Well, what I think... Yeah, see, you're just sitting around not talking. Go ahead, text me. What I'm thinking...
Trying to get a word in it. Yeah. Good. I've been texting Joy this whole time.
Damn it. If it were anybody other than Reeve, I'd be concerned about your marriage. The worry I have here is that may be a week in which kids are out of school and families are motivated to be gone. I mean, Election Day may happen in a week in which a lot of people are not here because people say the minute school's out, kids get in the car and they go on vacation.
Right, right.
So it's going to be a very screwy timing.
Yeah. Well, even if you're wrong, and I think there's a chance that schools may be getting out the first week of June, the last week of May, you're busy with
a thousand
things.
It's not a good time
things.
In any case,
right, exactly.
Right?
You're exactly right.
That's exactly right. It's not a great time to hold an election.
But we will be here, or at least someone will do a Tribcast.
We'll have a Tribcast on the 30th, right?
Right.
Wednesday.
I have no idea what day.
Well, that'll be fun. What will we talk about?
Everyone will be back by then. Do you want to quickly dip into the mailbag since we do that now?
This is the longest podcast ever.
We have plenty of time.
How much time do we have?
We got a couple more minutes. Someone wanted to know about the state of public education. Do you guys have any thoughts? It certainly is a litigious issue.
Awesome.
Are you running for something?
there are five state school finance lawsuits.
Right.
Currently ongoing.
Well, the presumption is that they're going to be, Morgan Smith has been reporting on this for us, the presumption is that they're going to try to, that they're going to try to consolidate these things and hold the trial in October if they can. And what they're trying to do, this is the people that want the state to do something, what they're trying to do is get a verdict before the legislature meets. I don't know that they'll pull that off. And I don't know
And anyway, it wouldn't affect the finance structure of the public ed system in this state for another couple of years anyway, right?
Well, we got to see. I mean, that's going to be the question. Does the court do anything before the legislature meets? And if they do, do they do it with a timetable and with, you know, a verdict that directs the legislature how to write a budget? Well,
and without that verdict, I mean, Governor Perry's already staked his claim to schools don't need any more money in Texas.
This isn't just Perry here. This is the way the Texas legislature operates with school finance. They never do anything without a court order. Every time they've changed school finance has been forced, right. They just, you know,
I said to Estes and Crownover yesterday, why can't you guys just fix this once and for all? Oh, it can't be fixed, they said. It can't be fixed. That's it? We're just going to throw our arms up in the air?
Right.
Can't be fixed?
You're like Yoda, there is no try.
Come on.
Well, who knows what the maps will be by then.
There's only sit back and wait for
it. Yeah, right.
Let's solve the map issue. And
maybe
then
an asteroid will fall and hit all 181 legislators, and then Ron Paul will fix school finance.
Right.
Well,
what's the gold standard?
To move a little bit from the notion of mass death and apocalypse, let's switch over to a special message from Chancellor Hance.
Ross, I've been taking up for you lately. The other day somebody said you was an idiot, and I said you were not. So I want you to take up for me. I'm taking up for you. You'll hear this recording back. Bye, Ross.
Well, I think that's a nice positive note to go out on. Ross, do you have any thanks that you'd like to offer?
No. It's good to be from West Texas. I'm from West Texas. I've shaken my accent.
I'll just observe that from the perspective of all of us here, you's not a idiot.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, with that moment of harmony, on behalf of no one, I should say that if you would like your suggested topics or questions in the special mailbag segment,
right, email to Joy Philpott.
You can send them via Twitter with the hashtag TribCast. You can put them on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Texas Tribune, or you can email TribCast@TexasTribune.org.
What if you have a Google Plus account? I'm just wondering.
Nobody has a Google Plus
account.
I know. I just wanted to throw that out. There are other ways of getting involved, but that's what we'll tell you for now. On behalf of Evan, Ben, Ross, and our producer Todd, thanks for listening.
No.
Yeah.